Hey, Nikki.
Hey, Selena.
Hey, y'all, and welcome to this week's farewell edition of Extra Sugar. That's right.
Farewell.
Cue the sad music and grab the Kleenex. Today we say goodbye to Suzanne and Charlene. Season 5, episode 24, which we covered earlier this week, was Delta Burke's last episode. And then Jean Smart is around for the first two episodes of season 6. But she is not long for the Designing Women world to get through our loss. We're going to talk about the good times, some favorite moments, maybe some favorite quotes, and what these two ladies mean to us. Said that really weird. That's fine. And then we'll touch on what went on for the two actors in real life following their exit from the show. And then we're going to wrap with, I don't know, it's a game,
right?
But we'll call it an activity. Who doesn't love an activity?
I love an activity. Keep me busy, Selena.
Well, basically, we're going to see if AI can help us figure out what would have happened to Charlene and Suzanne had we continued to follow their international stories. That way we know, like, how accurate will our overlords be? Will they know our story, Nikki?
I'm always kind to them, just in case.
Love you, Alexa. Love you. I wish your names weren't so close to my coworkers' names, because sometimes you just start piping up in the middle of meetings.
But I love you all the same.
Still love you. How that name could be so different from all names and still so close to people's names. Crazy. Anyways, so how do you feel about just starting with our favorite moments and quotes? You feel good about that?
I feel good about that.
Okay. Are you okay for me to share my favorite moment?
Yes.
Okay. So actually,
I'm panicking now.
One of my favorite moments, it's not actually in season 5, although I tried really hard to keep it to season 5, but because it is Charlene and Suzanne together, I wanted to share this one, which is in season 4 when Suzanne accidentally drinks Charlene's breast milk, which they call her express milk. I don't think they were allowed to say breast milk, but that was a top for me.
Okay. I am still flying high from my AFV episode couple episodes back. So I did it grand prize and runner up. Mm. So for Suzanne, my grand prize moment was episode 17 this season. That was the smoking subplot.
Okay.
So she had a bunch of really funny lines. I'll take 100 chances with my lungs, but you only get one chance with my wig. And then the, oh Lord, not again, when her wig caught fire at the end. There was also some really great physical comedy, like that bit where Charlene said she couldn't stand to look at her standing outside in the new smoking section and then unceremoniously like closed the curtains in her face. And then the real high point of that episode was this line from Anthony. I know this woman. She does what she wants to do till she doesn't want to anymore. Just stay out of the way and try not to get hurt. To me, that one line is the greatest tribute of all to the character of Suzanne.
I love that.
I kept thinking about that.
Yeah, I think that's right. I would also like for someone to say that about me.
Wouldn't it be nice?
Yeah.
I probably would say that about you.
It's impossible that someone might attribute that to me. Why does it sound so much better for Suzanne than for me? I start wearing it and I'm like, maybe that makes me a terrible person. This was so hard for me because someone limited us to only so many favorite moments, which was smart.
I limited us because we were both probably going to go over anyway.
That was smart. And well, so I had like, it's either this one or that one. And then I got up to like 8 moments and I cut it to 1.
And oh, you're allowed to have a couple.
Well, it's too late.
Oh, well, because I have 2.
So for Suzanne, it's when she fights Mrs. Chesley for her seat on the couch in season 5, episode 7, Old Rebels and Young Models. So
I thought about that one after I was done with my notes.
It's too hard.
Like, I'm not going to add it back in.
It's too hard.
It really was. It was really hard.
Especially with her this season. Man, as they were trying to get rid of her, they gave her all the best stuff.
So my runner-up moment was her performance in episode 16 when Bernice gets a new nose. Mm-hmm. It was because she had such good face work and a couple of really good lines. So like she choked on her coffee when Bernice compared herself to a pig eating all the cookies. Mm-hmm. Then she said Bernice reminded her of Noelle. And lest we forget, she said, I know you all think I'm selfish and shallow, but I know what's most important in life. And someone says, friendship? No, looking good. And then not to mention, she did prove herself a good person trying to help Bernice out.
No, looking good.
fucking good.
Just the way she's just her and Julia both really. Yeah. I'd have to give some credit to her as well.
Oh yeah, for sure.
The voice too. Yeah. Just so. Are we okay to talk about Charlene now?
Yes.
So for her, I think I'm going to say something too. I think it shows the disparity between moments and like Suzanne just has so many good.
Yes.
Ones. And I'm just going to be really honest. Charlene.
Wasn't that great.
Love her. But yeah. And I think this one in particular, because there were a couple of rough episodes for me where maybe she was getting on my nerves, like the one where she had the house.
I had forgotten about that till I went back and looked at notes.
Fever dream, all that. But I think for me, this could be recency bias, but what you gonna do about it? The Rocky Runner in season 5, episode 20, I'll See You in Court. Her pure exasperation over everyone's ignorance of that movie was an absolute top for me.
That was great.
So good. And it's kind of nice because she, but this is also, we're coming to the end of her run. I know people think about it mainly as the end of Suzanne's run, to be fair. But she gets to really kind of, you know, stick it to Julia for once,
yeah.
Who often is being quite condescending with her, mm-hmm. And who also threatened her child at the beginning of the season. So,
true. She
and I know people love that part, but she did basically like say she was going to give her baby to like dogs or something. And I do think that's like a little violent.
Right.
So that was my favorite for Charlene. How about you?
So I already gave Suzanne sort of partial credit for this one, but the moment where Charlene closed the curtains in Suzanne's face in the smoking episode is great. My number one runner up though was Charlene in episode 4 where Julia gets jury duty. Her moral compass was on full display. And then she just kept getting herself into so much trouble with Julia. There was one part when the county marshal or whatever it was came to the house to take Julia in. Charlene recounted a string of throwbacks of every run-in that the designing women have had with the law over the course of the last few seasons. The time she mooned the whole room, the time she drove through the porno stand, the time she drove the getaway car. That whole part was so funny to me. And then they, you know, Julia, like you just mentioned, threatens her baby. By the end of the episode, Charlene just decides to let things slide for the sake of her baby. So to be fair, and you mentioned this too, this was just after the house buying episode and she was on my last nerve by that point. She had just been a real pain in the butt. Yeah. But I do think that that particular episode reminds us of how straight-laced and like the moral compass she is for the whole show.
She's a big old donkey girl scout.
She's a big old donkey girl scout.
Whatever that means.
My grand prize, though, was episode 2, which I had forgotten all about. This is where Anthony meets his dad.
Mm-hmm.
I had completely forgotten about this.
Yeah, that was a great episode with them.
If you get to the end of the episode, she gives him a pep talk and the hard truth that he needed to go meet Charlie at the station. Their interaction was actually really dramatic. Anthony reminded Charlene that things aren't always so Opie and Beaver Cleaver, but she then turned and helped him realize that you only get one dad though. And then they ginned each other up to the point where they finally just run out the door to go to the station. So it was a lovely performance, but also a really lovely tribute to her entire character. She really loves her friends. She believes the best in life and the world, and she's willing to do what it takes to get that for herself and her friends. And that's why that was the number one moment for me with Charlene.
Before I removed all my backup options.
Which I'm really sorry about. You should always leave them, Selena. What am I going
to
do?
I wanted to follow your rules.
Am I going to kick you out?
Well, I was going to start the whole thing with, I'm not following your rules.
Selena. It's your show.
You know, it's our show.
It's your show and my show. You do your thing, I'll do mine, and never the two shall meet.
could have been a good alternative name for the show. I don't know. But, anyways, I just wanted to say that I totally see you on that episode because I had that in there because I do think that is a top for her this season. How about quotes?
For which, you want to start with Suzanne again?
Sure.
My grand prize. I'll say just my grand prize. The episode we talked about this week, episode 24, there's a word for people like you who think competition is a bad thing. Losers.
Oh, yeah.
I love it because it's very Suzanne. And I love it because it really resonated with me personally.
It was almost impossible for me to tease out my favorite Suzanne quote.
I have three.
This, Oh, excuse me. Would you like to go two more times?
No, I'm limiting myself to my own rules, but that's exactly what happened to me. It was such a slippery slope.
It's really hard, right? Mm-hmm. Not as hard with Charlene.
Not as hard. As
yeah. No. So, but this was the one that I wound up going with. Oh, get real, Charlene. You picked it, we painted it, and that's the way it is. I don't see what's so hard to understand about that. It's like I used to tell my ex-husband. You married me, you thought we were going to have sex, we're not going to have sex, and that's the end of the story. Which you can also find on our social media.
So her.
You can tell us the other ones.
My runner up was way back in episode one. She said, personally, I don't enjoy history. People said I should learn it because history repeats itself. If it repeats itself, why should I pay attention the first time? It's so wise. It's so wise in a character that we're trying to paint as not wise.
Right.
And then my honorable mention was episode 14. I say the man should have to kill the mouse. I gave that one my honorable mention because it is a fan favorite quote in general. It was a throwback to the man should have to kill the bug. And it was just a really delightful callback to her in previous seasons.
I want to say one of our most popular social media posts ever.
Yeah.
So
people love it.
They do. That they do. It also brings out a lot of opinions, which is really funny. Just a lot of opinions about who should kill what.
Who should kill what. Like, just kill what you're comfortable with.
What's happening? Oh
my gosh. Yeah.
And then like a lot of, you know what? People just get in their feelings. So I guess that can help them.
My ex-husband would never kill the bug. I was
a single mom. And that's why he's my ex-husband. So that's why I poisoned him with the Ipecac. So for Charlene this season, mine has to be, I can't believe y'all are being such prudes. I mean, you act like studying human genitalia and orgasm and premature ejaculation is something to be ashamed of. Well, here, let's ask Anthony. Best line.
Like you said, I really struggled to find lines for her that were individual lines that I loved.
Without context, right?
Without context, right.
Yeah. Right.
Suzanne stand alone in a lot of instances.
There you go.
And in fact, my grand prize almost kind of needs context because it's what was around it that was so funny. But it was in episode 19, Blame It on New Orleans. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, I must have passed out for a minute when she passed out under the microphone. That has such broad applicability to life. Yes. You're in a meeting and they're like, Nikki, did you have something? I'm sorry, I must have passed out for a minute.
No. You just lost the thread. Not to give away my key phrase that I use when I've stopped
and
listening.
I've stolen it now. And it's like if someone just like not even making sense anymore. I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. I must have lost a thread. Not you don't make sense, but I must have lost a thread.
Because I was sitting here knitting or doing anything else. Sorry, I was watching fingernails. Designing Women and I wasn't listening to you at all.
So my runner up is, again, less of a one line situation and more just a really funny series of lines coupled with delivery. So it's episode 13, Pearls of Wisdom, toward the beginning of the episode. Mary Jo and Charlene are talking about Suzanne having a tryout for a segment on the local news program. And Charlene says, still, I think it would be good for Suzanne to have a job. And Mary Jo says, Charlene, Suzanne has a job. Where? Here.
Oh, yeah.
And that whole interaction, just when I think about this season, I think about that interaction a lot.
Mm-hmm. That's a goodie. I like it. That's a goodie. Well, the next thing I wanted to talk about a little bit is why fans love them so much. And this is like our thoughts on that. Right. So it took some time, but we did finally find the Designing Women Hive on social media. And the show does have a dedicated fan base.
Yes.
And anecdotally, we've seen a fairly visceral reaction to the final seasons without Suzanne and Charlene, mm-hmm. and particularly Suzanne. So I do feel like we've seen enough that I feel like we have the pulse.
Yeah, I think that's right.
And so I feel more comfortable doing this now. Do you mind if I kick this one off?
Absolutely.
Okay, so for Suzanne,
I'm sorry. Absolutely, I mind. I would like to go first. No, please.
I was going to read it.
Take it away, Selena.
I wanted to. I'm like, wonderful, perfect. So on the one hand, it makes very little sense to me why fans love Suzanne so much.
Oh.
If I'm completely honest. Yeah. In many ways, she's almost the foil for the show. She is the old guard for the South. Very skeptical of the show's main objective, which I read to be ways to show a more progressive South. I don't want to put that on anybody else, but that's my reading. We said before, Suzanne is like a beautiful, rich Archie Bunker. You know, she's classist, out of touch, sexist, self-absorbed. I'd say a generous reading is that she has some prejudiced stances on race. She didn't want Anthony to work there or be a partner. And that's just this season after she's arguably had a lot of growth. Okay.
Sure.
Honestly, people should probably hate her. Mm-hmm. And yet she is hands down the favorite. And she's also ours. So I will also say for the record that she and Charlene are the only two that never get dragged in comments on posts.
Oh.
People really love or hate Julia.
Yeah.
God bless it. I think they might forget Mary Jo.
Yeah.
But here, I promise there's a good side. On the other hand, I think fans love her because she's hilarious and hilariously outspoken. She says what most people are thinking and wouldn't say. People love that. She's quirky with her gun-toting and pig-owning. People like a character. She is the eccentric side of the South. She became more relatable as the seasons wore on. You know, she lost all her money, we think.
Maybe.
Maybe it's unclear. There's the battles with her weight, constantly feeling the need to diet. I feel like almost that's a universal thing that people relate to.
Yeah.
And it turns out she really does care. You talked a little bit about this before, but you know, maybe the motivation isn't always pure, but Suzanne is fiercely protective of Julia and really all of the ladies. We saw her threaten Charlene's professor this season with a gun. She offers to pull a revenge plot on Don for Mary Jo after he ghosts her. She sells her Cadillac to pay for Bernice's corrective surgery. And early on, we got to see that vulnerable side of her, that question asking side of her with Lee Sing. Mm. And I do wonder if people just generally enjoy how she's overcome people's underestimation of her, because she's more than meets the eye and she is much more than a pretty face. So that's my long-winded way of saying that's why I think people really love Suzanne.
Yeah. I don't think I have much to add to that. I think you touched on almost everything.
Great,
that I was going to say. I would say larger than life is something that I think resonates with a lot of people. Like she's almost a caricature. So she's always sort of bigger than everybody else around her in terms of like her character and the things she says. And I think that really resonates with people. I think also a lot of times people just like to hear someone say the un-PC thing that we're probably all thinking somewhere in our heads. Not the racist stuff, not the sexist stuff, but sometimes they're just like calling stuff out.
Right. Call a spade a spade.
People really like that. Mm-hmm. She's a lot of comic relief. She's freaking hilarious.
And maybe I wonder if they're craving it right now.
Oh, people. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They're craving because we don't get that. Like there's so much fear in that right now.
Yeah.
For fear of saying the wrong thing. And I think some people are digging back into the well of sitcoms to see what people used to say. Maybe we could find a happy medium. I don't know. Go on.
I think a happy medium is probably the place we need to work toward. And I think that's probably what resonates is she does hit it sometimes. Yeah. Sometimes she's like, come on, really. But a lot of times she really does hit it. She just says it and you're like, oh my God, could someone just say that?
Anthony wants a VCR.
Just say he wants a VCR.
Get him the damn VCR.
Yeah. Exactly. Exactly.
Don't mess around with this couple that is cheating on each other.
Right.
Stop messing, you know, get out of the paint.
It'll get messy. Yeah. The other thing, so the loyalty was one thing I wanted to say. And then the last thing that really struck me is that I think some of her off-camera experiences, for the deep cut Designing Women fans, some of the things she experienced off-camera, I think endeared her to lifelong fans.
That's a fair point. You know, can I just tack on real quickly there that someone on social media told me that they not only stopped watching the show after she left, they stopped watching all of LBT shows.
Yeah.
Because that's how, whatever connected they felt to her story, that they couldn't even, it was like a boycott.
Yeah.
So I think that really speaks. And by the way, it's 2024 and they told me that.
Yeah.
You know, that's a long time ago.
It's a long time. I think you mentioned that a lot of people might relate to her weight struggle a little bit. One of the themes that I notice when I look at the comments on social media is people, well-intentioned, probably don't need to say it, but they'll always say, I never thought she was big. I never thought she was a large lady. So on the one hand, like, let's just not say those things. But on the other hand, that does give me a sense for how tapped into that experience people still are now.
Right.
It resonated with them
right.
that she was dragged so much.
Right.
And I think that endeared her to them, her character, and then Delta Burke as a person.
On the flip side of that, you'll have people say stuff like, the fatter she got, the funnier she got.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ, people.
Rough.
It's so
rough.
And it's so hard for me to not respond. It's so.
It's gotta be.
I've been trying to learn the joys of restraint. I do want to add on one more thing. I sometimes wonder, in thinking about this category in particular, and in pulling a lot of clips in the last year and thinking over the larger trajectory of Suzanne's character. Yes, she was funny in seasons 1 and 2. In my opinion, while it's not the way I would have phrased it, I also agree she gets funnier as the seasons go on. And she does start, you can feel that character change. She starts out more as like what I think was first intended, which was like this very demure, like beauty
right.
pageant. And then eventually she kind of goes into this more like body place.
Yeah.
You know, she's much more outspoken. She's larger than life, as you describe. I think that was the perfect description. We see some of that start to really, the seeds are planted in season 2 with the pig, with
right.
Noelle. We see some of that eccentricity,
right.
but it doesn't really start to take shape until season 3. Mm-hmm. And then it really gets pushed out there in season 4. And by 5, we're met with the Suzanne I think most people think of.
Exactly. Yeah.
And I think that's what you were speaking to in the main episode.
Yeah.
And I don't know if she had not. So some of that, I think, was happening along with, like, those character changes with her real life experiences. If she was battling depression, if she was battling weight issues or perceived weight issues or however we want to frame that, whatever those, the critique was coming at her for real. So it was really happening to her. And then all of the things with the show and the things with her husband and them not getting along with the producers and all of these things happening. And I think we see some of these, this bolder character emerge. And I just wonder if we had really carried on with the Suzanne of 1 and 2, and let's say the show goes 8 seasons and she's there the whole time, I don't know she would be the show favorite.
Mm.
That's my personal opinion.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that she really comes into her character until we get further in. And that's really when we see that Suzanne start to take shape that I think people remember and love so much.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right. Charlene, how about you want to lead us into this one? Are you comfortable with that?
Sure. Yeah, I think over the course of the show, Charlene became so much more than the receptionist at Sugar Baker's, which is how we met her at the very beginning. Mm-hmm. Dare I say, she became the receptionist of our hearts.
Mm.
Or at a minimum, the receptionist like we all wish we could run into if we went into a business. Like, she's charming
nice.
And funny and nice. I think she's a fan favorite for a lot of reasons, but in general, I think it's her balance of innocence and wisdom. Like,
mm-hmm.
she's simultaneously naive, but also can talk Anthony into, like, going to meet his dad, who he was adamant 2 minutes ago he wasn't going to, because she can talk that wisdom about family and life. She's salt of the earth and genuine, but she's also really quick-witted and funny. And I think people really liked that. It was hard to come across one line, you know, that encapsulates Charlene as a character. But in context and in her place in a conversation, she's so funny and adds so much light and warmth to everything. I think people really loved her little anecdotes of her small town and of the people she's met over the years. Early on in the series, we got to hear how many influential people she knows.
Right.
Just because she's freaking nice
yeah.
and talks to people and takes a genuine and kind and takes a genuine interest in people. And I think that warmth and that authenticity really showed shown through for people and resonated for people. The last thing that every time I think about her is that like donkey Girl Scout. What do they call her? Big old donkey Girl Scout. Mm-hmm. I think that resonates with people too, though. Her straight-lacedness and her moral compass for the like what she provides to the rest of the character. Mm-hmm. I think that it's not in a Julia haughty sort of like I'm better than you way. It's just in a like let's not be a-holes to each other sort of way. Mm-hmm. And I think that resonates for people.
Yeah, I think resonates with Charlene is just the good general word to use. Like the character of Suzanne is complicated. I don't know that I feel like the character of Charlene is complicated.
No, she's pretty straightforward.
Right. So, but similar to Suzanne, I do think that she is also underestimated a lot, but she shouldn't be.
Especially this season she was.
Right. Yeah. And I also feel like it's easier to figure out just why people like her. I think some of our words will overlap, but she's warm, sunny, and kind.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, you know.
We all like a warm, sunny, kind girl.
Right. Unless you're like a sorceress of the dark heart or something, you probably like to run across that type of person. Because this feels like the other side of the coin that you've already shared. But because they play her as ditzy so much, it makes those wittier moments even more punchy, mm-hmm. I think. And I also think that her backstory on the show is truly relatable. She grew up in a small town. She didn't come from much. She's starry-eyed. She's a dreamer and hopeful. And even if you don't relate directly to those things, I think most would agree they're admirable qualities to have or to run across in a human being.
Right.
So this one just a little bit more straightforward.
Yeah.
How about how we relate to them? So when it comes to Suzanne, like, what do you feel like where she sees you?
Oh my gosh. So I think I'm just a reflection of other people's love of her because she tickles me personally because I think she sometimes says things that I would love to say if I weren't afraid. And I don't mean the racist and sexist things, but I mean like the calling something like it is and just saying it so we can all just get it out in the open and start talking about that instead of talking around it. Mm-hmm. I wish I did that more.
Right.
Because you waste so much time by not energy. Just getting to it. Right. So I love that. She's also just the character is ripe for antics, like her quirkiness and her unusualness, but also her larger than lifeness. She's just going to get into antics, which personally for me, I love a good antic.
You like it when antics happen to you.
I love when antics happen for me to watch on TV.
Oh, okay.
So I think that's what I loved about her. Like you said, she's been a complicated character over the course of everything. But if I think about season 5 and the character that she is now, I think it's just that she's so freaking funny. I just love how funny she is.
Yeah. I think so. If I was going to think of like the ways I feel like I relate to Suzanne, her version of anger feels like me.
Oh, okay.
To be honest. So I related on such a very deep level. Now, I had to go back to season 4 for this, but episode 20, Tornado Watch, when she screams happy anniversary, Lois and Shimmy, after she's told Charlene repeatedly she doesn't want to be on camera, she doesn't want to do it, please don't make her say happy anniversary to strangers, is like, it's pretty on par with who resides inside me. Okay. I very much relate to her as a childless person, even though hers is a tad bit more extreme than mine. But her experience with Randa at the mall, I don't know I'm above getting in a fight with a 9-year-old. I'm not proud. I'm just honest. And then her hard pass on going down to a pizza parlor with a bunch of screaming kids, I feel it. I'm going to be shopping with Bernice as well. I would love to go on that shopping outing, as it were. She's got some real only child energy, despite being the little sister of Julia.
Well, because she might be little by a lot, which means that she might have been an only child.
And I think that she's often described that way. Yeah. Like, you know, and so this season in particular, when she goes in and she takes every space in the New Orleans hotel room and doesn't think twice about it. Why should I move my stuff? I was like, oh God, that's who I was when I was like 12 and I didn't know any better. I was like, oh, I thought all these spaces were mine. I'm sorry. So, and then finally the constant dieting, rice cakes, check, smoking, check, every dumb idea, check. So it just, I get it. So how about Charlene?
I think Charlene is the one that personally, like I, the character of Suzanne resonates with me for reasons, but not for reflective reasons of my own.
Right.
Charlene resonates with me because I feel very Charlene. Mm. Like, she's obviously not so secretly one of my favorites on the show. I think she's so delightfully naive, caring, and curious, and it's been really fun to watch her grow. I do think we've talked about this, that the writers sometimes take the easy way out and write her as dumb, but we know she's not dumb. Like, she is smart, but that doesn't mean that she can't also be naive and believe the best in life. And that's where I feel like I see eye to eye with her. I genuinely want to believe the best in life. The older I get, the more skeptical I get, but I usually do have a pretty like positive outlook on things. Like, it's going to end up. Like, I'm not always going to say it's going to end up well, but we're going to come out the other side of it. It's going to be fine. And there are some things we can do along the way to make the adventure a little more fun. Like, them in New Orleans, her approach to New Orleans is my approach to a new city. Like, let's go do, let's go see, let's try this, let's try that. And like, I have this real fear of missing out because there's so much in life and I don't want to miss it. And I feel like Charlene is that same way. Mm-hmm. I also have a really annoyingly strong moral compass. Like, I want to do the right thing to the point sometimes of shooting myself in the foot because I want to close that loop. I want to make sure you feel seen. Right. I want to make sure that, you know, if you texted 3 days ago with something that's outstanding and no one responded to you, I don't want you to feel alone. So I'm going to drudge it right back up and we're going to have that conversation, which was her and Julia in the jury duty episode. Like, right. We're going to finish this out because it's the right thing to do. So I feel like I resonated in that way with her.
Okay, I'm in typical R fashion. I'm not sure how much I relate Flippy to Charlene floppy. At all. Yeah, we both love a good pop culture reference, and I would consider myself a bit of a dreamer like Charlene. When I was younger, I always wanted to be the first woman everything. You know, from this podcast that I'm like, okay, Reese Witherspoon's coming along anytime. We're gonna go LBT and get
is
signed
going
up with
to
her.
Email us soon. I feel it.
Yeah, like, you know, just I am, there is that version of me that sort of weighs out or balances out the really fun, pragmatic side of me that's like, everything's terrible. Anyways, I am also a strong believer that women should be in the ministry.
Incidentally.
We have that in common. And she loves to learn, I love to learn, and that's about it. And I love her. I don't feel like I at all, really, with her. I'd love to be her friend. But I think that makes sense, right? You kind of want to draw in people who have enough in common.
Right.
Like, we could talk about movies, and then we're both bringing something else to the table.
Exactly.
So
it takes all kinds, is what they say.
That's why you could be my Charlene.
I think I am your Charlene. And I think you're my Suzanne.
Okay, we got a ton in common.
I actually think a lot of times you're more the Julia.
Yeah, probably.
You keep us in line.
Sorry about that.
Not the bad part.
Sorry about that. It's my competitive nature at the ballpark. I also thought we could talk a little bit about what they've meant to us. We've kind of been doing that all along. Also, I just want to say that it's really funny that I'm taking all of this on because Nikki came up with this outline and I keep saying it like I came up with this. And I feel like I need to give Nikki some credit right now. But would you like to talk a little bit about what they mean to us, Nikki?
I feel like I merged those feelings into the last segment, so I don't have much more to add.
Yeah, I think that's fair. We've been kind of weaving it in throughout. I think I was just going to, for me, I'll just also note that most importantly, that both of these characters have taken up a lot of my brain space for the last 3 years. Delta Burke in particular has been the catalyst for so many things that we've taken a closer look at as we've gone on with our own show. So we've looked at things like lifestyle habits that I think have been really important because they're things that can really affect and impact your life. This ongoing unfair treatment of women, both in Hollywood and in real life, is always going to have a soft spot in my heart. The politics of TV often on the screen, I think, are really important. It's so much to unpack when maybe on the surface it appears like it's no big deal. It's just an old sitcom, but it's a lot more, and it's allowed myself the opportunity to explore those things. And I think they're very important.
It's so hard to tell people like the elevator pitch of our show, because the elevator pitch of our show is that we're talking about designing women. But then I always have to like caveat it with, but we talk about so much more than that. We talk about all these other things that come up along the way when you talk about a show this old.
Right. It's really a springboard to talk about important things. I mean, they're sitcoms. They're not important, except for pure entertainment. But it's not life or death, you know.
But I do think that's a lot of what LBT's been trying to do with the show.
It was the intelligence,
exactly.
Of it, right?
Yeah.
The show in general, but certainly Charlene and Suzanne have kind of been in the background of my whole life, and that's something that I really had to sit with this one for a minute. But I've talked about this before. But each time I've watched the show, I've been in a really distinct era of my own. So the first time I watched the show, like large parts of it, I was a little kid. And then I was a young adult on my own for the first time. And now I'm someone staring down the barrel of middle age. So just really three very different places in my life. So in some ways, they're like a measuring stick for my life. It's like notches on a doorway. So it was interesting to kind of like reflect back and think about the different person I've been as like I've come back to this show, and how I kind of come back to it with like a little bit of a different lens, you know. So the other thing that we talked about that we would talk about is touching on what happened in the aftermath of the show for Delta Burke and Jean Smart after their exit from Designing Women. Mm-hmm. If I was just going to like encapsulate it really quickly, Delta Burke clearly had a tougher time. But I do think it's fair to say that the shadows of Suzanne and Charlene loomed over both of their careers for a long time. So, Nikki, you pulled the articles for both of these scenarios where they're at. We've been starting with Suzanne the whole time. So you want to start with Delta?
I was going to start with Delta, but only actually because hers was tougher to talk about in the immediate days and months after the show. We know she was leaving the show under duress. We know from interviews she's given since then, it was a bit of a dark period. So I actually wanted us to pick up a couple years later after she left the show, because the outlook was a bit brighter for her. Mm-hmm. So by late 1994, she and LBT had patched up their feud, at least to a point where Delta was comfortable committing to a brand new show, Women of the House, in which she reprises the character of Suzanne Sugarbaker, but this time she's filling her late husband's seat in Congress. So designingwomenonline.com had an old TV Guide article from around this time in which Delta says, "It felt like I had come home again. It was suddenly like I was at peace in my body. I was at peace in my mind." So throughout that article, she talks about the really dark spiral that she went through after she left Designing Women. So it included a failed attempt at another show, Delta, and then her slow climb back out of that, thanks to a lot of therapy, it sounds like, and a lot of self-reflection. Toward the end of the article, she says, standing on the set in a sleek black and white designer suit, she says, "I think this is the happiest time in my life. I feel like myself again." Sadly, the show only lasted a season or 13 episodes.
Yeah, I would really actually like to get a hold of it, because I'm very curious and I'd like to see it. That is something I'm actually interested in exploring in terms of Sweet Tea and TV.
Yeah.
Even maybe not episode by episode, but maybe just like trying to watch it and then like having one episode on it or something.
It would be a really short episode by episode season, because it was only 13 episodes.
Right. I think that was a really, really good overview of what was in the article. There was a couple of things that surprised me. One thing that surprised me is that she's like, that I had not read before, is she's pretty artsy. So in addition to therapy, it sounds like she was also doing some, I guess she was drawing like fashion and design. Mm. So I thought that was interesting, but
she did end up getting her own clothing line later,
she
too.
She did. That's right. And you can actually still find it.
Okay.
I've seen it, like, going through Marshalls and stuff.
Oh.
I almost, like, posted something to stories, but they were, like, intimates, and that felt weird.
Oh, well,
to be like, here's a bra. Thank you. Thank you for sharing this bra. So the other thing that stood out to me that I really liked reading in the article was they were talking about what a pro she was on set. Mm. And so in that series two was Terry Garr and the woman who plays
Patricia Heat.
Thank you.
I was shocked she's in that show.
So we're talking about two well-known actors. I mean, and she's a gold standard of sitcoms in her own right.
Patricia with everybody, Heaton.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. With Everybody Loves Raymond and
In the Middle.
I mean, altogether, probably 20 years of sitcoms right there. And they said that both her and Terry Garr were struggling with their lines, and Delta Burke comes in and she's just firing off missiles. Mm. And I love that. And it spoke to exactly like what Delta Burke did on Designing Women. She came in and she fired off missiles. So it was nice to hear that she was in a happier place. I mean, maybe eventually her happier place was not being on a television show and just being home with the husband that she loved. And that's okay too, if that's what she wanted to do. I do think that it is really something to think about. Did you see how old she was in that article?
Mm-mm.
She was 38.
Okay.
She was our age. Attempting a second act, trying to work on herself, figuring out if she wanted kids, all at the same time coming off everything she experienced with Designing Women. I think that's a ton for anyone to go through. And I just want to, the last thing I want to say about this is that, like, I think my heart just really goes out to her still. For that time period. And
sounds dark.
I truly hope it's lighter. I actually had someone reach out and on social media, she messaged us and told us that she's friends with Delta Burke.
Oh.
And she said that she became friends with her because I think she like was making some t-shirts and anyways, and they struck up a conversation. And, you know, I the one thing I had shared with her is just that I hope that she saw the kind of love that she still generates. That's on something that you and I have talked about. Mm-hmm. Because I just think that's really important for someone to see, really anyone, but especially someone who went through so much and didn't really probably feel like she had anyone in her corner at that time. There was no way to get that automatic feedback the way you do now.
Right.
And so I just truly hope that she sees that there are people out there that really cared about what she brought to that character and that she actually just brought like a lot of genuine happiness to people.
So. Yeah.
We want to talk about Jean Smart?
Yeah. So she left Designing Women on much brighter terms and with a much brighter outlook, I think, than compared with Delta Burke. So we found a 1991 LA Times profile of her, which I'm afraid maybe you weren't able to read because it was behind a paywall. Were you able to get it?
Every great once in a while when my time has come back around.
Okay.
So I was able to read it.
Okay, good. Because it stopped working for me and I had found it, had to find another way. I'm now an LA Times subscriber.
Perfect.
Just kidding. So LA Times sums it up this way. Countless stars have left popular series and immediately disappeared from view. But that hasn't been the case with Smart, who played the Sugar Bakers business manager, Charlene Frazier, for 5 seasons. The article went on to note that she had been working nonstop, I guess, from the time she left the show. She was in big screen movies like Mistress, which I had to look up, to TV movies like Overkill, and she was working off-Broadway as well. And then they asked her how she felt about leaving Designing Women, and she said, "I had a good time doing the show, but 5 years is an awfully long time for an actor to work on the same project. It's sort of an unnatural position for an actor to be in, and to a certain extent." So at the time that the profile was written, she was promoting her latest NBC made-for-TV movie, Just My Imagination, and talked a lot about how excited she was to take on new things and try new things. She talked a little bit about her relationship with Richard Gilliland and how many collaborations they had, like, almost inadvertently had with one another. It had just worked out that they ended up collaborating a lot. Mm-hmm. She also talked about being parents to their young son, Connor. And all in all, it really just sounded super rosy from her. We know from your Extra Sugar segment, Selena, way back in season 1, episode 14, that she's worked really consistently over the years and even mounted most recently what you said, don't call it a comeback, but some people are calling a comeback or a renaissance in the last couple of years.
Yeah, to me, it just reads like the strongest point of her career, the most prestigious television series. Maybe she should have been getting them all along, you know, but everything she kind of touched, even if it were like smaller roles or whatever, like she does bring such a charm and just so much energy to it that she makes like this lasting impression. Mm-hmm. I think she was only on like a small handful of Frasier episodes, but I know that that's one that I think she like wound up winning an award or something for it. Like there are no small parts. says the person who basically falls apart trying to do one video on her own phone.
I always end up with the small parts. It's a safer place for me to be.
I did think of it very much so as, let me rephrase this before I finish. Her talking point about just being ready to move on. I'm trying to figure out if I believe it or not. I think maybe she was ready to move on and do different characters, but it's hard for me to believe that most people weren't ready to jet after how hard it had been just being around there with everything going on off screen.
Like everything in life, it was probably a pros and cons list that she ultimately had to make, because in several interviews, this LA Times one may have been one, she talks a lot about how they had a young son, they were actors, so having a steady paycheck was really nice from Designing Women. And when you have a three-year-old and two actors, any one of you having a steady paycheck is probably great. She talks about, though, how that is not a place from which to make artistic choices. And so she had to sort of come to terms with that. And she had to make peace with the fact that she might have to go with a little financial instability. So I imagine there was a pro-con list. And one of the biggest cons to leaving the show was losing financial stability. But I'm sure one of the biggest pros had to have been, I mean, if the entire cast got together, the entire cast and crew got together and had to vote about one particular person, that starts to feel toxic. Mm-hmm. And no one wants to work in a toxic environment. And for her, maybe she just had to make the choice that it was time to move on. And one of the benefits of moving on is she leaves behind toxicity, but also she gets that talking point of, now I get to be artistically creative or whatever. Right. Probably a little bit of everything.
Yeah. And I mean, and this is always kind of like the, where our conversations have to come to a head is, we don't know.
No idea.
We just
other than what we read. We have to read between the lines sometime.
Okay. Well, one more note on Jean Smart. Hax returns to Max on May 2nd.
Hax on Max.
Sounds like a Dr. Seuss book. So, last up, Nikki, you had the excellent idea to see what our friend ChatGPT had to say about Charlene and Suzanne's journey after Designing Women. So, in prepping for the episode, I just went ahead and asked a series of questions. And then, on a scale from 1 to 10, I want to know, how do you think old ChatGPT did?
Okay. 1 being bad, 10 being good.
Sure. Let's go that way. So, what did you think?
I didn't read them. Do you have them somewhere? Oh.
I'm asking you to guess. Do you think they did a good job
or
not?
Okay. I see. Whew. Okay. I'm so prepared for something else. Do I think they did a good job? No. I'm... I'm going to give it a 5.
A 5? Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, let's get to it. Let's see how this turned out. So the first question I asked was, Suzanne Sugarbaker and Charlene Frazier left Designing Women in 1991. Charlene heads to England, Suzanne to Japan. What happens next? After Suzanne Sugarbaker, this is the answer, played by Delta Burke, and Charlene Frazier, played by Jean Smart, left Designing Women in 1991, the show continued with new characters and storylines. In the series, the departures of Suzanne and Charlene were explained by Suzanne's decision to marry a Japanese businessman and move to Japan, while Charlene moved to England with her husband. Following their exits, the show introduced new characters to fill the void left by Suzanne and Charlene. Julia Sugarbaker, played by Dixie Carter, remained a central character, along with Mary Jo Shively, played by Annie Potts, and Anthony Bouvier, played by Meshach Taylor. The show continued to focus on the interactions and dynamics among the remaining characters as they navigated their lives and careers at the Sugarbaker interior design firm in Atlanta. So,
thanks, ChatGPT.
So, you can definitely tell that they found things on the internet. So what I had to do is I kind of had to start fine tuning the questions right, to try and see if I could get a little bit more out of them. Where I finally started to get a little bit more was with, what do you think happened to Suzanne Sugarbaker after she moved to Japan?
There you go.
I removed the question from Charlene's point of view because the answer was really boring.
Okay.
So here's what they had to say. Given Suzanne Sugarbaker's larger-than-life personality and ambitious nature as portrayed in Designing Women, it's intriguing to speculate on what might have transpired after her move to Japan. Here are a few possibilities. Successful business ventures. Suzanne was portrayed as a savvy businesswoman throughout the series.
Was she though?
After moving to Japan, she might have utilized her entrepreneurial skills to, and I might learn how to say that without drinking a little, to start her own business or expand her husband's existing ventures. With her determination and charm, she could have forged valuable connections in the Japanese business world. Number two, cultural adaptation.
Oh, no.
So moving to Japan would have presented Suzanne with the challenge of adapting to a new culture and language. Perhaps she immersed herself in Japanese customs and traditions, embracing the opportunity to learn and grow personally and professionally.
Sounds just like her.
Number three, international influence. Suzanne's bold personality and flair for design could have made her a prominent figure in Japan's fashion and interior design scene. She might have become a sought-after consultant or influencer, blending her southern charm with Japanese aesthetics. Number four, personal growth. Living abroad could have provided Suzanne with a chance for her personal reflection and growth. Away from the hustle and bustle of Atlanta, she might have discovered her new passions or hobbies, enriching her life in unexpected ways. And in family life, number five, Suzanne's marriage to Mr. Fumio Sugiura could have brought her joy and fulfillment in her personal life. Whether starting a family or nurturing her relationship with her husband, she might have found happiness in her new role as wife and potentially as a mother. Oh, there's one more thing. Overall, while the specifics of Suzanne's life in Japan were not explored in the series, one can imagine that she's continued to live life with the same gusto and determination that characterized her character in designing women, leaving a lasting impression wherever she went. I think that last part might have been the most accurate. None of it was inaccurate.
Yeah. I love the idea of her going to Japan and creating like almost a microcosm of the Beaumont Driving Club, like taking her approach to culture and society and like extending that to a group of Japanese women. Like I like imagining Suzanne standing in the middle of a group of like 10 Japanese women who are suddenly wearing shoulder pads and big hair.
Oh, wonderful. And,
like talking about who they're not going to let in, which biddy they're not going to let in to their next bridge game or whatever.
I was thinking more like she just had to get in to be a geisha because it's super expensive. Right.
That could happen too. I do like this idea of her stumbling on a business venture. I do kind of wonder if they're mixing Delta Burke because she did have the clothing line, which I think was, they're still selling it. It must have had some level of success. I do like this idea of her getting like some fun money to do something and landing on something that really resonates, like taking wigs to Japan. Like wigs were never a thing before Suzanne Sugarbaker got there and introduced all the women to wigs or
maybe
something.
Maybe it's a line of baby wigs.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I like that.
I like that idea.
And then I went a more shenanigans route. So I was like, tell me the shenanigans for the ladies. So here's what's happening, what they think might have happened with Suzanne. So while the series Designing Women did not depict Suzanne Sugarbaker's life in Japan, imagining the kinds of shenanigans she might have gotten into can be a fun exercise, given Suzanne's flamboyant personality and penchant for finding herself in amusing and often unexpected situations. Here are some speculative scenarios.
All right. I love speculation.
Cultural clashes. Suzanne, with her southern charm and outspoken nature, might have found herself inadvertently causing cultural misunderstandings or faux pas in Japan. Picture her attempting to navigate Japanese customs and etiquette with her signature flair, resulting in humorous cultural clashes and misunderstandings.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that is something. I see here, too, why writers are like, wait a dang minute. Because they're definitely coming up with these nuggets of ideas for episodes.
Oh.
Although, as a writer, I might also be like, help me remember what I wrote. And what can I write next on this 24-episode season? Fashion fiascos. As a fashion-conscious character, Suzanne could have found herself trying to make a statement with her wardrobe in Japan, only to discover that her bold Southern style doesn't quite fit in with the subtler Japanese fashion sensibilities. Imagine her attempting to blend her love for big hair and bold colors with traditional Japanese attire, leading to comedic fashion fiascos, which is kind of the route you were headed.
Except in my version, she like takes over and wins.
Right.
And suddenly all of Japan is Suzanne Sugarbaker.
That's right. Language mishaps. Suzanne's southern drawl and colorful vocabulary could have led to amusing language mishaps as she tried to communicate in Japanese. Picture her attempting to order food or ask for directions, only to be met with confusion or hilariously mistranslated responses.
Yep.
Culinary adventures. Suzanne might have embarked on culinary adventures in Japan, sampling local delicacies and attempting to recreate southern dishes with Japanese ingredients. Imagine her trying to hand her hand at sushi making or attending traditional tea ceremonies with her usual flair for the dramatic, adding an extra dose of comedy to her culinary escapades.
I think she would have had to know how to cook to start there.
Right, exactly. But I could see her getting like, maybe she's like trying to make friends because she's lonely and like goes to a sushi making class or something, or like she gets goaded into one.
Yeah, right. I could see that. Yeah.
Business endeavors, knowing Suzanne's entrepreneurial spirit. Were we watching the same show? She could have found herself getting involved in various business ventures in Japan, from starting her own fashion line to opening a Southern-themed restaurant. I keep wanting her to eat.
Yeah.
Picture her navigating the complexities of Japanese business culture with her trademark charm and determination, leading to both successes and mishaps along the way. While these are purely speculative, they capture the essence of Suzanne Sugarbaker's character and the potential for comedic hijinks in her life in Japan. So how about Charlene? Imagining the kinds of shenanigans Charlene Stillfield might have gotten into after moving to England provides a delightful opportunity to explore her character's warmth and innocence in new surroundings, which is exactly how you described her, warm and innocent.
Is it time to tell everybody I am actually ChatGPT?
That's right. Nikki has left.
I have been replaced by Nikki Bot.
So here are some speculative scenarios. Lost in translation, Charlene, known for her charming Southern dialect and occasional misunderstandings, might have found herself in amusing situations due to differences in language and British colloquialisms. Picture her innocent confusion over British-English phrases or her attempt to decipher local accents, leading to humorous interactions with neighbors and shopkeepers. I could see it.
I could see that. This would be a very funny couple of episodes.
Right. Just like her landing there initially. Tea time troubles. Charlene's introduction to the British tradition of tea time could have resulted in comical mishaps as she navigated the intricacies of brewing the perfect cuppa and mastering the art of scones and clotted cream. Imagine her earnest efforts to host tea parties for her new English friends, complete with her signature warmth and hospitality, despite occasional culinary mishaps. Cultural clashes. Charlene's Southern charm and down-to-earth nature might have clashed with the reserved demeanor of some English acquaintances, leading to humorous misunderstandings or awkward social encounters. Picture her inadvertently breaking British etiquette norms or trying to introduce her own Southern customs, such as potluck dinners. That could have gotten interesting. Or porch gatherings to bemused English neighbors.
I thought she was going to introduce pot liquor.
Maybe. Historical hijinks, England's rich history and picturesque landscape could have provided Charlene with opportunities for whimsical adventures. Imagine her exploring quaint English villages, getting lost in sprawling English gardens, or enthusiastically participating in historical reenactments, all with her characteristic innocence and curiosity. And then last, quirky quandaries. Charlene's endearing naivety might have led her into quirky predicaments as she adjusted to her life in England. Picture her mistaking British customs or landmarks for something entirely different, inadvertently joining a local Morris dancing troupe, or embarking on a whimsical quest to find the best fish and chips in the countryside. These are purely speculative, but they do capture the essence of Charlene Stillfield's character and potential for heartwarming and humorous adventures in her new life in England.
We get it, ChatGPT. There was never a sequel to the show.
Do you feel satisfied, Nikki?
I would not watch either one of those shows, but if it was just a couple episodes, it would have been really funny.
Yes, I agree. It felt much more specific when I looked at these at like 5 o'clock in the morning. And now that I'm looking at 3:50 in the afternoon, I'm like, well, they just pulled a bunch of keywords.
They did, didn't they? That's interesting.
I did get a last minute request from Nikki to look into Olivia.
If it's terrible, I don't need to know.
It's terrible.
Okay. I don't need to know.
I think it's because they have less to pull from.
I just wanted to know what would have happened to Olivia.
I think she's president.
Yeah, well, it's possible.
Yeah. She's now on Madam Secretary on CBS.
I couldn't decide if she would have gone in the military like her dad, or if she would end up back in Poplar Bluff. You know what I mean?
That's fun. Like, she was like big city girl.
Exactly.
In London.
In London.
And she got tired of that and decided to go back and,
Right.
And then Green Acres it.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
We can do that. We'll chat GPT it.
There you go. We don't need ChatGPT.
And then I know you wanted to know about Noelle, but she ran away. So what exactly is it that you want to know?
I just want to know, like, where did she end up? Like, did she end up
in a loving home out on Green Acres?
That's what I wanted. Yeah. Like, did she run away to the suburbs of South Atlanta and she was adopted into a farm family? Or did Consuela's family catch her again and take her to their meat market?
Let's go with the first one.
I like the first one better.
That feels happier.
Just those feel like the two unanswered questions for me. I need resolution.
Well,
I mean, I still need to know what happened to Quint and Claudia, and I know we're never going to see them again. Yeah. So I guess theoretically we could have run that on through ChatGPT and or I could have come up with predictions, but those were the... They've still got a couple of seasons left with Mary Jo, so...
That's right. And it's not really about them. It's about Suzanne and Charlene.
It is.
And for on that note, to Suzanne and Charlene and Delta Burke and Jean Smart, thank you for the laughs, the tears. Thanks for the memories. You will always hold a special place in our hearts. You know the drill. DM us, email us, or contact us from the website and find us all over the socials. And that's this week's Extra Sugar.